Welcome to Elite Achievement, a podcast for financial advisors and leaders in financial services who are building and scaling firms. I'm Kristen Burke. Let's start here. After a 45-year career in financial services, today's guest, John Gatewood, believes it's not knowledge that distinguishes the elite advisors. As I read his new book, The Listening Advisor, I couldn't help but think that the same communication skills that distinguish elite advisors also distinguish elite leaders. Whether you're serving clients, developing advisors, or leading a growing firm, the ability to listen, build trust, and create authentic human connection is what moves people to action. John, I'm looking forward to today's conversation. I'm curious, you've had a 45-year career in financial services. What inspired you to write the book, The Listening Advisor?
Thanks. That's a great question, Kristen. I believe that we have a training crisis in our industry today. What do I mean by that? First of all, do you know what the failure rate of advisors is in the first 5 years?
It's pretty high.
72%. And some companies keep maybe 1 out of 10. And we need advisors. Why do we need advisors? Because 38% of advisors are going to retire in the next 10 years. You know how many advisors we have under age 35?
I do not know that number.
7%. So we're going to have a big shortage. And the problem with training is that they're mostly focused on knowledge, financial planning, investments, technology, compliance. But nobody really focuses on the skill that matters the most in wealth management, and that's the ability to master communication in a way that you can create an authentic human connection, which means, number one, listening, learning to listen so well that the person across the table says, wow, Kristen really knows who I am. She knows what it's like to be in my shoes. Second, that you speak so clearly that clients are motivated to confidently act on the things that we're advising them to do. And that's our job, right? Our job is to motivate people to action, to do the things that will put them in a position of having future financial security. So that's really what drove me to do this.
So John, as you've been studying communication and listening, what do you think are some of the biggest misconceptions advisors have about listening?
To me, the biggest misconception is that they think that they're doing it. Most advisors think, you know, I listen well to my clients. I ask great questions and I have a great relationship with my clients. The fact is that the data shows otherwise. So Jump AI, for example, had a study of 10,000 advisor meetings. And in it, they found that 84% of the time, advisors spoke much more than the clients. However, 87% of them believe the opposite. So there's a perception gap. You know, we think that we look one way, but actually we're perceived differently by the client. And that's the gap that I'm trying to close, is how can we get you to be actually better at the skills that make you a master communicator, where you can create an authentic human connection that wins clients who refer, advocate, and never leave. Think about it this way. Have you ever recorded yourself for the first time to kind of see how you do? Do you remember when that happened?
And yeah.
What did you think when you first saw it?
Oh, I mean, I think about when I first started recording these podcasts, and we were laughing at the start of our episode, how I noticed in some of the data, people are going back and listening to the first episodes. And I immediately cringed because I think about what I sounded like then and what I sound like now. And I remember, John, overseeing new advisor training, and we used to record new advisors doing their language. And it's such an important development tool because you learn a lot about fillers, about how you come across when you're communicating that you would never learn if you weren't recording.
So, I mean, that's a great point, is that unless you see yourself, how do you know what you really look like? Like, I remember the first time that I was videotaped. I had to do a fact finder for this guy in Chicago. And I was nervous as heck. I got through it. And at the end, man, I had sweat under my armpits. I was more afraid of the guy than I was of asking the questions. So then we played it back. And first thing I noticed was, oh my God, the back of my head's so flat. I always thought it was rounder back there. And then my eyebrows kept going like this. And I'm going, oh my God, do I actually do that? So that's one of the reasons why there's this perception issue. Unless you actually see what you do, you don't really know how you're perceived by others. And that's why things like what you were doing when you were doing training, it's so important to role play, to videotape. So why don't firms do that? Number one, it's expensive. So think about it. Like when I used to train advisors, I'd sit in a client meeting, I'd observe, then we take 15 minutes to debrief and give them a little nugget. Well, you think about that time alone, that's an hour and 15 minutes times two people, that's 2.5 hours. That's a lot of money, time, when you're thinking about training. So that's one of the reasons why people just don't do it. The other reason is because we've been in a knowledge-based business. People have paid us over the years for our knowledge. They come to us for our solutions. And so even if you didn't have the best communication and relational skills, you could still do okay. But today, with AI commoditizing all that, it's providing all the solutions right there. People are going to wonder, well, what is the value of my advisor? In fact, I was talking to one of my brother-in-laws yesterday, and he was telling me that he's in this special program over at JP Morgan, where they're training him and 25 other people how to communicate with ChatGPT to create investment strategies. And with the idea that they would become their own self-managers of their own portfolios. Well, these types of things are going to happen, but that's not going to remove the individual, because AI is only providing information. Information is not what motivates. How do I know that? Because gyms are full in January and empty by March, right? Everybody knows what they have to do to be physically fit, have great nutrition. I mean, there's tons of stuff on the internet. I remember when I started in the business, my first mentor in the business was Al Grana with Northwestern Mutual. And one day he sat down with me and he said, John, this is an important lesson to learn. The decision to buy life insurance someday is a logical decision. Everybody agrees. You know what? I should buy life insurance someday. But the decision to buy life insurance today is an emotional decision. And emotions are caught, not taught. That's why we have coaches in every field, because people need motivation from other people. But how does that happen for us as advisors? Number one, people come and stay with advisors because of how we make them feel. So in order to have that happen, we have to be good listeners. We have to listen to truly understand where they are. But then secondly, as I said, our job is to motivate. How can we speak in a way that it's so clear to them and motivating? It's not just information. Now, information is good from this standpoint that people fear what they don't understand. So we need to provide information, enough information so the person's calm and they're ready to accept it. But that's not what motivates them to. So those are all the types of things that I've learned over the years. How do we do that? And that's where I find that there's the difference between those advisors who are absolutely exceptional with those, everybody else. So that's what I'm trying to do with my book, is to find ways to help people learn to be better communicators so they don't have to wait years and years and years to try to have a good relationship, but they can develop a relationship right away when they start to meet people. Does that make sense?
It does. And I think what you're talking about here too, John, it helps with newer advisors because oftentimes they're very intimidated that they don't have all the knowledge. And let's be honest, right? Would you agree that no advisor is ever going to know everything there is to know about financial planning? There's so many Correct. Topics, right? So we're never going to have all the knowledge. But one of the things I love about what you're teaching in the book is that if a new advisor can become a phenomenal listener, they can build a really great clientele and a really great practice very quickly.
Exactly. And that's the issue they have today, because how many kids coming out of college starting in this career are learning how to speak? They can barely write because they're using AI to write for them. So and they're coming out from a digital society where they're, you know, more comfortable using text, social media, and more. But they're not skilled or trained in how do I make a true, authentic connection with clients in a way where I do understand them. I'm able to understand them. How do I do that? So those are the listening skills. How do you ask questions? What type of questions? How do you know that you're getting down to the actual root of the matter, the things that actually matter to people, not just the data? So those are the things that really matter with the listening. That's why listening is, that's why I call it the listening advisor, because that's the least used skill. Like, how many of us are in the tell mode versus the ask mode, right? So think about it. You're in a conversation with somebody. When people are talking, what happens while one person's talking? The other one's formulating, okay, how am I going to respond? So what that is that's inward thinking. We're only thinking about what we want to say, where if we listen, when somebody's speaking and we act and we have the attitude of curiosity, well, now we're listening. So we're outward, not inward. Let me see what I can learn. And maybe what other questions can I ask to get better clarification? Don't you feel good when you have somebody who's actually listening to you? By the way, my girlfriend told me that my next book should be The Listening Husband. So we'll see how that goes.
So I wonder, it sounds like you're doing really well listening professionally, but maybe there's an opportunity at home with your girlfriend?
You know, that is what happens. So.
Well,
I'm awesome in the office. Just not that great outside.
I think that'll be a book that I would love to purchase for my husband.
I'm sure he'll love it too.
Oh, I know. He's going to love that I was talking about this. But John, one of the concepts that stood out to me in the book is the difference between being interested and being interesting. Why do you think this distinction is so important? And how do you know when you've slipped into interesting mode?
So that's a great point, because being interested versus interesting. So what do we mean by that? When we're interesting, we're trying to tell people about ourselves. If we're interested, we're asking questions about the other person. And think about it. You've been to social gatherings or a networking event, and you know, when you run into somebody, you start to talk, it's a new acquaintance, and they start talking about their business, all the things that they're doing, you know, and after about 10 minutes, you're looking at your watch thinking, how can I escape from this person? Because they won't stop talking about themselves. That ever happen?
It just happened recently. And it's funny because I was reading your book on a flight, and I get to a conference I recently attended, and I'm having dinner with my best friend and one of her colleagues, and I'm talking about my work. And all of a sudden I just kind of watch their eyes kind of maybe start to glaze over. And that was my clue. I'm like, okay, I need to ask a question and stop talking about me and my work, and let's pivot this conversation.
Right. Oh, awesome. What a great experience, because that's exactly what happens. Now, have you been in another networking event where you meet somebody brand new, you tell them who you are, they start asking about what you do, and they ask follow-on questions? They're really interested in what they're learning. And after 10 minutes, they have to go, and you think, boy, I'd love to carry on the conversation some more. Why is that? because they were interested in you. So what I say is connection before content, understanding before advising, their story before your solution. We have to focus on them. It's not about us. Yes, we have to tell them the solution. We have to be clear. You know, information knowledge that can't be communicated is knowledge that can't help anyone. So we obviously have to communicate, but it's the listening. People want to have trust in us. The more we listen, the more we know, the more we get down to what really matters to them, the more that builds the relationship. And that's what then leads to the client who wants to stay, refer, and advocate. Make sense?
It totally makes sense. And I know so many advisors are focused on how can I get more referrals? How can I get better referrals? And I think it's fascinating how you're connecting that back to this skill of listening and asking better questions, because you're creating an experience where people feel heard, they feel valued, they feel different because no one's given them that space to talk like that before.
Right. And nobody wants to be sold something. And so many people focus on presenting strategies, ideas, trying to convince them, hey, here's an idea that might work for you, as opposed to the other way around. Hey, let's understand what you really need, want, and what is it that will get you there? Okay, so sure, you can go and try to sell an idea or a concept, and that might work, but that's not what's going to win clients who are loyal clients who refer and advocate. So that's why that relationship, understanding how to communicate, is so valuable.
Absolutely. Well, I know you've spent a lot of time in your career developing other advisors.
Yes.
How do you think becoming a better listener yourself changed the way you develop advisors?
That's a great question. So think about it. If our job as financial advisors is to motivate people to action on the things that would be in their best interest, wouldn't that be the same for advisors? We're trying to motivate them to act in a way that helps them improve their communication mastery skills, their presentation skills. But what happens? First of all, if I'm the one that is training, and if it's a younger person, they may feel somewhat threatened, or they may feel, well, this person knows a lot more than me. So how do you know if you're going to be getting the actual feelings of the person or the thoughts? So we have to listen. Yeah. How many times do you walk around the hallway and say, hey, how's it going? Great. Well, is everybody really going great?
Right. No one really says anything other than great, do they?
Yeah, exactly. Or, you know, I go on to do some coaching for an advisor and say, so how's it going? It's going great. Well, how do I coach if everything's great? And we know it's not great. So this is where asking questions is critical. So when you said it's going great, tell me more. By the way, those three words, tell me more, are three of the most powerful words put together that can help you have better understanding. Whenever somebody says something, rather than just respond, say, tell me more. That way, it's inviting the other person to elaborate, to go deeper, and not just saying it one time, but saying, is the information that I've gotten at the heart of the matter? And then going back to clarify, let me make sure that I understand what you said. Because how many times do we misunderstand what people say? You know, when somebody says, I just want to be comfortable in retirement, say, great. Well, when you said you want to be comfortable in retirement, tell me what that means. See, now you have to begin helping to visualize, make it more real for them. And the more that you can have them elaborate, the more it connects to their emotions, right? Because these are the things that they want. You know, just say, yeah, I just want to retire comfortably is not very emotionally attractive, right? I mean, it's not driving me. But if there are things that I want to do that define what a comfortable retirement is, that's what we need to know. Those are the things that we need to bring up, because we're solving problems or helping people reach goals. So if you don't know what the specific thing is, this is way beyond the math. Too many people rely on the math and not on the emotional side of that human connection. You know, you were asking me about how else do I help advisors when I'm, you know, especially in terms of listening. So one of the things I usually ask is, so tell me, what's the biggest challenge that you're facing right now? Where do you think that you need the most improvement? Whatever they said, well, tell me more about that. Let's see if we can go deeper. Let's see, what are the things that are preventing you when you're saying that this is happening? So doing that digging. And by the way, this is not a one size fits all or a silver bullet. These are all tools. It's part of the art, right? Communication is as much an art as it is a science. The science is that we know that when we say those three words, that it's opening people up to say more, just, you know, to say more about what's on their mind. But the art is, when do I use it? How do I use it? And so on. But that's how I do it. And empathy, we have to be empathetic with people, because there's whatever their struggles are, it's their struggles. And we have to recognize that that's how they feel. So unless we understand how they feel, that we empathize, that we both recognize it and understand it, it's going to be harder to get their commitment to follow on. You know, you want them to want to do the hard work. You know, one of the things I say in my book is, the meeting is not the dress rehearsal. The dress rehearsal has to happen outside the meeting. And think about how most advisors prepare meetings. They're preparing the information. The financial plan's getting updated. They're getting the portfolio analysis. They're getting thoughts from the investment committee. Maybe they've gone to the tax strategies. Maybe they're going over their estate plan. That's all disinformation. And that's what's usually presented at a meeting. How many people think about, what am I going to say? How am I going to motivate them to take the action? How do I know that, what can I do to make sure that I'm improving the relational aspect of my client and myself? So that's where, to me, there's a mismatch. All this effort is being put into the knowledge piece, but very little is being put into the script piece. You know, you've been to concerts before, right?
Sure.
Yeah, I used to play in nightclubs and when I was in college, if you can believe that.
What genre were you playing at nightclubs?
Oh, I played all kinds. I usually played bluegrass and country, modern country. But I played all genres, but that's what we usually played when we were in nightclubs in Washington, D.C. And, you know, when we would go and play, we weren't there just to kind of jam. We were ready. And the amount of time that we would spend both individually, so, you know, you go and by yourself at home, you're just practicing notes over and over and over and over again to perfect them. And then you get here as a group and then you're playing over and over again. And then you make a little adjustment so that by the time you get to the place that we're playing, I mean, we're ready to go. We're locked and loaded. Well, how many people do that type of hard work when it comes to scripting what you're going to say? So here's a simple thing. There are many things that an advisor will typically talk about. It could be a Roth IRA conversion. It could be standard deviation. It could be dollar cost averaging, whatever it is. Most people will go in and wing it. Maybe they say it one way one time and they try to say it again the next time they go, but they're not doing it in a structured way. What I would challenge people to do is say, well, what are the things that I can say continuously on a regular basis? Write it out. How can I write this as brief as possible, as clear as possible, and as compelling as possible, so that whenever the topic comes up, it just rolls out of your mouth? You know, like people will say, I'm concerned about the market. I don't want to lose any money in the market. So one line I say is, the market has never lost an investor money. An investor only loses money if he sells at the wrong time. Do you know how many times I've said that note? I've read that line many times. But it's, I practice it. I listen to others. You know, I go to conferences like, you know, they just had the Northwestern Mutual annual meeting. I'm going to be speaking at the LPL conference next week. People go to those things. They want to hear ideas from the greats. Well, take those things, write them down, and then wordsmith it so that it's your own. Can I tell you a story about Al Granum?
Sure.
So one day, Al sits me down in his office. Al was very unique. He's a legend. But he said, John, I want you to listen to these poems and tell me if you can find the common thread. I said, okay. I mean, I'm not really a poem guy, but go for it. So he says, some sail east, some sail west by the very same breeze that blows. It isn't the breeze, but the set of the sail that determines the way each goes. And I thought, math nerd John Gatewood, that's, you know, that's cool. Not sure what you're getting at. He said, okay, well, listen, I'm going to tell you another poem. And I said, why don't you see if you can find the common thread? So then he read a second poem, and he was really getting into it. I mean, he was passionate about it. And then he said, at the end, you see the common thread? I said, Al, I'm lost here, man. I said, okay, I'm going to do one more. So then he did one more poem. I mean, he was ready to get up out of his chair, and I was almost ready to get up out of my chair. He said, now you see the common thread? I said, help me out, man. What is it? He said, the common thread is that these are poems that move me. When I say these poems, I get excited. And when I get excited, you get excited. And that's why we have to find ideas that move people's minds. What are the ideas that we can find so that when we say it, we're saying it with such conviction that the idea is so clear and convincing that people say, yeah, let's go. So that's what I would challenge the audience is be on a lookout for things, ideas. What are ways that you can say things that are unique, that are clear? Also, brief. Because we are in the ask mode most of the time, we also tend to talk too much. I'm one that has been very bad at that. I like people, so I tend to talk a lot. But we have to be self-disciplined. Why is that? Especially today, everybody is time starved, right? I mean, people are busier today and harder to get to nail down than they were when I started my career, for sure. So, for example, just getting a client to meet with you, sometimes that's a pain, you know, and they say, I just don't want to get together. One of the reasons that they're doing that is because they don't perceive getting together as necessarily value. So, but when we do get together, what we need to do is to be respectful of their time. So the more concise, the more clear, the shorter way that we can explain concepts that are vital for that meeting, the more we're respecting their time. What else does that do? It leaves more time for the relational stuff. So if we just wing it every time and start talking, and then we overtalk where something should have been said in a much shorter time frame, much more clear, much more motivating. Find those things because that will make your client experience better. Remember, it's how you make them feel. Well, you don't want them to feel like you're talking so much and they're looking at their watch because the meeting has to end and you haven't even gotten to the relational part. But that's why I was saying about ideas to move people's minds, clear speaking, making sure that we're scripting, practicing, improving the way that we're saying things. Find ideas from others, steal them, write them down. I mean, most of the ideas I have are just things that I've learned from others and then stole them and made them my own. So there you have it.
John, as you shared the example of the poems from Al Granum, we started talking about the importance of conviction. And in the book, you wrote that the conviction you bring is not separate from the message. It is the message. When an advisor has the technical knowledge but lacks conviction, how do you help an advisor develop that conviction?
That's a really good point. So my point in the book was that the messenger is the message. So it's more important in the way that you convey your conviction than what the message is. And this is particularly important during key moments like a down market. So what do I mean by conviction? So you may have an advisor that theoretically understands that you shouldn't move to cash, but now it's 2008, 2009, and the market's still going down, not even looking like it's going to go up. And, you know, you're going to feel the feelings too. We may intellectually understand, yes, we should not go to cash, we should stay the course, we already had enough cash so we can make it through. But a client says, man, I gotta stop. You have to get me out of this. I don't want to lose any more money. Well, that's a tough one. And unless you have conviction, it doesn't matter what, you know, historical data that you show, you know, with, you know, the market always recovers, people that go out, you know, now you're having to make two critical choices, when to get out, when to get back in. Most of the time people miss the right time to go back in. So they lost all that gain. That's fine, but that's not conviction. So what I would say is when you understand it theoretically, but you're not sure if you have conviction, what I would do is to borrow the conviction from others who have it. That's why the leaders in an organization, those are very important things that they need to have. They have to have the absolute conviction that whatever we're recommending to clients, despite whatever the market is doing, is the right thing right now. So let's borrow that. Another way it will come is when they have the experience. So once you've had the experience of going through the market. So let me give you an example. In 2008, we had a couple that husband and wife came in and, but no, it wasn't, it was 2020. Husband and wife came in panicking about the market. And, you know, we explained to them the history of the market, the reason we had structured the way, because we had planned for this, because we know that the market's going to go down at some point. So we've got cash, so they don't have to worry. But the, you know, this is definitely not the time to sell. Well, the wife was completely convicted. The husband said, no, I got to go to cash. I don't want to lose anymore. So what they agreed to is that the wife was going to stay the course and the husband was going to go to cash. Well, lo and behold, the market comes back a lot. And it wasn't until a year and a half later that the husband finally decided to go back into the market. Well, the difference in what their accounts were worth was significantly different. So why am I saying that? Here's an example now that when somebody doesn't have conviction, now they have a story that they get that can help them learn about the conviction. Here's a story that they can now convey to a worried client to help give them conviction. But it's our conviction, our message. The messenger is the message. Because they will see if we're worried. If we're worried, they're going to be worried.
Yeah, absolutely. Sense? It sure does, right? They feel that they're going to borrow the confidence from you or the lack of confidence. Yes. They're going to pick up on that.
Exactly.
John, what do you think is the biggest mistake leaders make when they think they're developing advisors?
That's a good question. Well, the biggest mistake, I think, is that they don't train on these key essential skills. Let's face it, it's not knowledge that distinguishes the elite advisors from everybody else. It's their ability to have an authentic human connection, an authentic relationship of trust where clients feel totally heard and understood, and they confidently act because we're so clear in what we say. That is what is not being taught. Look, there's so many things that they could be doing, but they kind of just throw them, you know, this is maybe this a little bit better than others, and maybe there's a little bit more awareness right now, but there's no real structure. That was actually what drove me to write the book. I wanted to have something that was a structured process to give people the tools and the skills to try to become a better listener or better communicator. But reading the book is not going to make it happen. They have to do the hard work, just like when you were doing the role playing. They have to do the hard work. You don't just role play one time and then stop. You got to do it over and over and over. You got to keep scripting, improving. Every time you hear somebody say something that you go, oh, that's a good one, write it down. Every time you say something, it's, oh, that came out pretty good, write it down. Keep a log of those, practice them, make it part of your repertoire. And then that way, it'll make you better at being more clear when you're speaking. And clarity is important because clarity helps with the motivation.
Love that. Clarity helping with motivation. John, thank you so much for the conversation today. If people want to learn more about you, the listening advisor, the work that you're doing, where can they find you?
So the best place to find me is on the website. It's just thelisteningadvisor.com. So if you go to thelisteningadvisor.com, first of all, there's lots of great information on there. Whether you're an advisor or whether you're a firm training advisor, we have great information. The book launches on September the 29th. So there will be a link to go and buy the book, but it'll be available on Amazon and all the other places. So as soon as it's available, you can just Google it and I hope you'll buy it. But more than buying it, I tell you, I believe that any person who buys the book and actually does the hard work will improve their communication ability. But what that's going to do, that's what's going to help them have, you know, get the client who you've been talking to about moving their 401k over. But you know, whatever argument you give them, they don't seem to want to move. Well, these are the tools that will help you to do that. So you can continue to grow your book, find new clients faster, find new clients better. That's why I have written this, and I hope you take advantage of it.
Well, and I've had a chance to read the book, and I can tell you from my opinion, the work you put into the book and the concepts you're teaching, they're not only applicable to advisors building their clientele, but they're also really applicable to firm leaders. I think you can apply these principles to recruiting, and as we've talked about today in our conversation, to developing advisors.
I agree. Thanks for reading the book, by the way.
Yeah, thanks for letting me. I loved it. So. And to those of you listening, what are you taking away from today's conversation? I appreciate you listening and investing the time to grow as a leader. Follow Elite Achievement for more conversations on leadership and building a firm.